Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of the Jewel Cast. This is John here, and I had someone on the line with me. Oh, they're back. Andrew, is that you?
Yeah, am I coming through?
Yeah, you're coming through. Okay, how's it going, buddy?
It's good. It's good.
Your first appearance in like 3 months, right, or something like that?
It's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a hard semester at college, I'm guessing, or something like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, and plus we only do these episodes every other week now as opposed to every week, so it's also like half the opportunities for people to be on, so it happens.
It does, it's great to be back. It's just great.
It's true. How was your day today, Andrew? Hopefully better than mine.
It was all right. I'm on vacation, so that's nice. And I'm back in sunny Southern California. I did have to go to the doctor, get a checkup, and get my blood drawn and whatever. So that wasn't great. That wasn't my favorite. But I always had the thought of the evening Jewel Cast to keep me going throughout the day. So
it kept me going, too, because... Oh, and Derek is on the line now with us, I think. Hi, Derek.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I was just about to say, so my day, I had to go back to New Jersey, which is always terrible to begin with, but I had to go there to renew my license because getting a New York driver's license would be an even more annoying process, and I just didn't want to bother with it considering I barely drive anyway. So I go back to New Jersey to get my license, okay? And my father... A very unreasonable man decides he basically we have two cars available. Now, me, I would take the car that you know is in good working condition, that everybody knows runs regularly, that has had no real problems. If he decides to take his Lincoln that he claims had just gotten fixed, the car proceeds to die on us in the middle of the road, like right in front of an intersection. So that was a great deal of fun. I really enjoyed waving people around the car while they honked at me. That was basically my day. I did end up getting the DMV at least. I did end up getting the stupid license renewed. But not a good time. Not a good time at all.
Yeah, that sounds bad. By the way, Derek, we don't actually talk about hockey on this show. So just
I
be aware.
I prefer it that way.
Yeah, no, it's
We had a caller named Diesel D that came on during my story there, and then he dropped. I was going to get to you, Diesel D. I don't know why you dropped. But,
He hated your story, dude.
It's just so riveted by the story that he had to...
It's a little early for callers, but Diesel D, you are now on the line. Who is this? Oh, then he... then he hung up again. Okay.
All right. Forget this guy, dude. He's slowing us down. We got to move on.
Yeah. It's actually a Skype, too, which is why I actually have a name and not a number. So I don't know. Diesel D's having some Skype issues. So anyway, Derek, how was your day? Was it better than mine and Andrew's?
Yeah, it was pretty uneventful for the most part. So, yeah, definitely sounds better than yours.
Yeah, it was... it was not a good time. The best part of my day, when the best part of your day is going to the DMV, that's probably not a good day. But at least New Jersey DMV, thumbs up. You had no issues. You got me out of there in only an hour, which was less than I expected. DMV gets a bad rap, but you were totally fine today. No real complaints for you. And now I don't have to worry about this again until 2019, so that's good.
That is good.
Yeah. Anyway, so we usually do 10 minutes of no hockey, and we have not hit 10 minutes yet. Does anyone have any updates on ways to get Eric a date? We've been asked to help out with that, and I don't know how it's going. Eric is going to be at the Gretzky, the Gretzky statue at 7 o'clock Pacific tonight. Is any prospective, I don't know, lady callers would like to
I think that's all we need to do right there. I think that will work.
So if anyone wants to be Eric, 7 o'clock tonight, the Gretzky statue outside Staples Center, that's where he'll be, apparently. And I think I can share that information because he shared it under the hashtag Jewelcast, so that makes it public Jewelcast information.
Foresee absolutely no complications resulting from publicly sharing his exact coordinates.
Well, he did it first. I'm relaying the information. It's just like what happens when Doug Wilson chooses to relay the information about Joe Thornton. Like, at that point, you can't blame the local beat writers. They're just relaying the information that was already made public by one Mr. Wilson. So, don't shoot the messenger is the general vibe here. I think we can all agree with that.
There was an astonishing number of Sharks fans who were, like, eager to bring out the pitchforks and knives for David Pollock, who reported that story, somehow, like, claiming that... what's said to 350 season ticket holders in a dark room before a game against Nashville should stay there for some reason.
Look, it's a variation on keep it in the locker room. It was keep it in the season ticket holders room.
Right.
So, yeah, that was literally what I was referencing in that joke because that was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. It's like he said it in a public room to a bunch of people. It is not privileged information. He is not their doctor or their lawyer. He is not relaying information protected by law. Therefore, the beat reporters can feel free to report on it. But that was kind of amazing. I guess we can get into that. Why not? So, Derek, what is going on in Sharks land? Why were Doug Wilson and Joe Thornton at each other's throats this past week?
Well, I think a lot of it is dissipated today with the huge news out of San Jose that should probably save the Sharks season. Mike Brown is actually skating again, and he's expected to come back at some point during the road trip. He's only played 8 games this year, and I think you can draw a straight line from his lack of availability to the Sharks' struggles this season. So, yeah, I mean, none of this should matter in a week when they get Mike Brown back, and he's just tearing it up for the Sharks en route to the playoffs. No, I mean, I think to some extent it's been a little overblown. Like, people were asking Joe Thornton and Pavelski and Couture whether the whole incident was why they gave up 4 third-period goals to Chicago the other day and why they're distracted. And I don't know. I just don't think this has any impact on the on-ice product at all. But, I mean, it does sort of, like, reveal how dysfunctional the organization has been for the past, I don't know, 9 or 10 months ever since the collapse happened. So, yeah, I mean, it was definitely the first time that I can think of that a player has openly called out a GM like this. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting story. I just don't know if it really has any impact on this season at all for the Sharks.
What's your take, Andrew? Got any hot takes on it?
I think that's about right. I think it's not going to really matter that much whether the GM personally likes the player or not. They don't have to interact with each other much. The GM isn't even doing anything right now. The trade deadline is passed. He has nothing to do. So I'm not really too concerned about this affecting the Sharks if they go down the playoff push. You know, I'm sure Joe Thornton knows how to tune out a distraction or a controversy. I do think it will have some effect down the line in next offseason in that it will make the Sharks look bad. And either Joe Thornton and Doug Wilson are going to have to publicly get together and, like, say, oh, we like each other now, or I imagine that they will get rid of one of them. So,
okay, so this is why we had, that's a good transition to the whole Team Thornton. Well, I know that I saw the hashtag Team Thornton a lot. Derek, was there anyone using the hashtag Team Wilson? I didn't see that at all.
No, I don't think so. And with good reason.
I just want to, meet this person who's like, Team Wilson, we're great. John Scott.
Oh, I'm
yeah.
Team Wilson. I'm Team Wilson here. I want Thornton gone. I'll send him to
Andrew
Buffalo, please.
All right. I saw more than one person suggesting they should trade to the Kings, which would be funny, but no cap space, unfortunately.
Yeah, the salary cap exists, unfortunately.
Yeah. you could take back the Brown, though. That could work.
it would get him that cup you probably want him to get so bad, Derek.
Yeah, that's like a total, like, Doug Wilson flips off the fans and just tries to get fired move, like trading Joe Thornton for Dustin Brown. That'll go over really well.
With the Islanders, or somebody floated the Ducks on Twitter, that makes some sense, although I sort of doubt that Doug Wilson would do that. But the Islanders make sense. There are a few landing spots.
Yeah, the issue is will he want to go to these spots? And, you know, at the end of the day, it's still going to be down to him waiving his no-movement clause. So I guess the question, Derek, is do you think this past week's latest circus and all everything that's going on has made it more likely that he'll waive? Like, do you expect that to happen?
No, I don't think it really has had any effect on his willingness to waive. I don't think there are many circumstances at all in which he'd actually agree to a trade at this point. I think if anything, this has probably made him even more stubborn not to acquiesce to Doug Wilson's demands. If Doug Wilson even asked him, I mean, Wilson has remained adamant since the trade deadline that he's not going to ask Thornton or Marleau to waive their no movement clause in the offseason. So, I mean, first of all, Wilson would have to ask, which I don't know if that's actually going to happen. And second of all, I really don't think Thornton is going to agree to this. He's invested too much in San Jose. He plans to stay here at least for the rest of his contract. I don't think he's going to move. And I don't really think there's anything the Sharks can really do, even if this was somewhat a ploy to try and make him feel uncomfortable, which I don't think it really was. There's really nothing they can do to get him out of here.
Yeah, to add to that, the impression I got, the strong impression was that the fans and also his teammates are really, really on his side here.
Yeah.
So he's
yeah.
got to feel really supported and probably, I mean, I think if his teammates also hated him, then he would leave, but that doesn't seem to be the case at all.
Yeah,
meanwhile,
absolutely.
What does this do for Doug Wilson's future? Does it have any effect on that?
I don't know if it really does. I think this is one of those things that it was interesting and it was pretty funny when it happened, but I don't know if it has any long-term implications for the Sharks, mostly because, I mean, Doug Wilson has thoroughly covered his ass here. Like, he was, like, the second they were eliminated, he was talking about a rebuild and how the LA Kings and the Chicago Blackhawks underwent these long periods of losing before becoming the teams that they are now, kind of implying that was sort of the plan for the Sharks. And I mean, as much as he said earlier in the season, we still want to make the playoffs, I'm guessing sort of the report that he compiled for ownership was that they expect a few seasons out of the playoffs in order to sort of restock their prospect cupboard and make a push later on to become a contender again. So I don't think anything like this. I don't think this incident. I don't think missing the playoffs. I really don't know what would have to happen for Hasso Plattner or anyone else in the ownership group to step in and fire Doug Wilson. I think most likely this season ends with the Sharks missing the playoffs and maybe firing Todd McClellan, and that's about as far as it goes in terms of any sort of major shakeup.
That has to be depressing for Sharks fans.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think they're pretty much guaranteed two more seasons very similar to this one until Thornton and Marleau's contracts run out, and then they can truly bottom out. So, I mean, the next 2 years just seem like they're just going to be wasted seasons, which is pretty sobering.
So on the topic of the Sharks playoff push, they went 2-1-0 again this past week. So they're not, I don't want to make it sound like they're totally blowing any chance they had or anything. They had a good week. But the loss to Chicago this past Saturday, I want to say,
Yeah.
It was probably it put another damper on it, and now if you look at their odds of making it in, they're not particularly high. I think I saw like, what is it down to, like 16% or something?
Yeah, that sounds about right. And yeah, I mean, they have, I think 10 of their final 13 games are on the road, so it's going to be tough for them to make it at this point.
So it's 14.5, by the way, I just looked it up. So like, assuming that this is it for the Sharks, like, if we were going to write their obituary, it really just comes down to the off-season moves for you, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there were definitely things that they had control of that they sort of screwed up, either in the name of rebuilding, whatever that means, not that they really got any closer to securing a top prospect through the draft or anything this season. But, yeah, I mean, they let Dan Boyle walk, and they didn't really replace him with anyone outside the organization. They instead moved one of their best forwards to defense, where he's nowhere near as effective as Boyle was, and he's nowhere near as effective as he is up front. They basically did nothing to address some of their existing depth concerns. They signed John Scott and Mike Brown and pretty much called it a day. They didn't address the left side of their defense until they traded Demers for Dillon, which was sort of filling one hole by sacrificing a player in a different area. So, yeah, they basically got worse this offseason by not really doing much, whereas the rest of the Western Conference pretty much made moves to stock up. So those were sort of the underlying issues that were there all season, and then they also got a pretty mediocre year out of Patrick Marleau. I mean, worse than mediocre. They got sort of a disappointing season defensively from Logan Couture. Vlasic and Braun weren't as good as they were last year, which was sort of expected because they were amazing last season. And Alex Stalock was one of the best backups in the NHL last year, and he was pretty much terrible this season. So all of those things sort of compounded the pre-existing issues, and that pretty much leads to one of the best teams in the league becoming completely mediocre.
Do you have any explanation for why they were? Because I looked at this split a while back, and it's pretty much gotten worse since I first looked at it, where if you look at their season, if you split it up from October, the start of the year through December 31st, they were a 52.5% score-adjusted Corsi team at even strength. If you go then from January 1st to present, they are a 49.3% team. But do you have any explanation for that? Is there anything they changed, or like lineup-wise, or is just the team falling off?
I mean, I guess the main thing that would be the difference between those periods was sort of moving Melker Carlson up to the first line, which, I mean, he's scored well enough in that role, but he's not really a possession boon. And the way the Sharks are set up, they're basically a one-line team where Thornton and Pavelski have to do everything. So if their one-line mate isn't quite as good as Tomas Hertl or Patrick Marleau, who they had up there earlier, or Matt Nieto, that basically the crux of the team is sort of weakened a bit. I don't know if that's the only reason. And I think probably if you looked at like Fenwick and shots on goal, it's sort of, there's no like clear correlation between the first half and the second half. All three numbers have sort of bounced around. I think more or less they've been a mediocre team since day one, and not a whole lot has changed that. So, I mean, I think you'll see small differences if you slice the season into separate parts, but I don't think they've necessarily been a markedly different team.
Yeah, their Fenwick for the even strength 5-on-5 and the same debt rating is actually even worse. It's 49% even. But like, yeah, it is kind of just a weird little pattern I noticed where they seem to fall off as the season went on. Didn't they make that trade with Dallas around early January? Was that even
they made. No, they made that in early November.
Though.
Yeah, and that really hasn't really changed much in either direction. The only thing is that Dillon has had, I mean, it has nothing to do with Corsi, but Dillon has had a pretty unlucky season in terms of PDO, so that's somewhat hurt them, but that's not really Dillon's fault.
The sad part is you can so easily imagine an alternate universe where the Sharks sign Radim Verbata or they sign Matt Niskanen, or
right.
You know, they have these gaping holes at their first line left wing if they're going to move Burns, or at defense if they weren't going to move Burns, and you know, they had tons of cap space, which San Jose has, you know, usually spent pretty close to the cap.
Yeah.
So this is very much self-inflicted, but I still think, even saying all that they're probably still a bubble team this year. I mean, they are in the bubble right now, but they were probably the 7th to 9th best team in the West this year, and they had a 99 PDO this year. Their goalies weren't very good. I think if you play the season 1,000 times to this roster, the Sharks, maybe make it 60% of the time or something. So I don't think their roster sucks.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't mean to imply that they're like a terrible team or anything like that. They're not, and they're, I mean, like you said, if they get maybe a few more saves from Alex Stalock in a few games, or they get Patrick Marleau not shooting something like 4% at even strength this season, they probably would have. But I mean, they sort of put themselves in this position where they're basically an average team at controlling the play. So small discrepancies like that are going to sink or sustain them either way. So yeah, I mean, the issue was sort of deconstructing what was a very good team and making it into a mediocre one more than making it into like a terrible one outright. So yeah, I mean, that's definitely a fair assessment of them, that they're probably the 7th to 9th best team in the West.
So do you think are you heartened enough by Thornton and Marleau? Like, their underlying numbers are still good, even if Marleau can't shoot this year.
Yeah.
So are you heartened enough that you think in a magical world where Doug Wilson is not Sharks GM, you could sign a bunch of free agents and go for it next year with Thornton and Marleau, like, one last time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think they need to sign a bunch of free agents. I think if you move Burns back to forward, and if you sign either Mike Green or Cody Franzen or maybe Jeff Petrie on the low end, I think you've pretty much solved the Sharks. I think, to the extent that they're probably back to what they were in 2013-14, obviously Marlowe's is probably a little worse than he was that year, but at the same time, you've got Hurdle and Nieto making some strides, even though they've had sort of unlucky seasons this year. And I mean, you've got probably Rafi Torres coming back or Nikolai Goldobin making the team to shore up the depth. And I think that would probably be a team that's good enough to win the division title or at least compete for it like they did last season. So, yeah, I mean, they really would only have to make one major signing, and that's pretty much it. But their chances of them moving Burns back are just so slim. And, I mean, even the chances of them opening up their pocketbook for a slightly older player like Mike Green or Cody Franzen is probably not going to happen. So, yeah, but I mean, if they wanted to go for it, I think they still have a core that's good enough to win, at least for the next year or two.
The only reason I'm hesitant to, obviously the Sharks probably need to go something like 9-3-1 minimum to get in. The only reason why I would think it's possible, even though they play a lot of road games, is they do have a bunch of weak-ish opponents.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end of the season, they get to play the Coyotes 2 more times. They get Colorado, they get Edmonton,
Toronto.
They get a bunch of teams. They get Toronto, they get Montreal, who's really not very good, aside from Carey Price. They get Philadelphia. So, like, I guess they have a shot at getting in. So, on that question, if the Sharks do get in, does that change anything in management's attitude at all? That they overachieved or whatever, and they look to maybe then add something, or is it just never going to happen at this point?
Yeah, I don't think it's, at least as long as Doug Wilson is the GM, I think he's pretty much committed to his version of a rebuild, which I think is sort of be mediocre for a few years until guys like Goldobin and maybe Mirko Mueller and obviously Hurdle and Nieto develop into better players. Although at that point, I don't really know what the plan is in terms of replacing Thornton or Marleau, because they probably won't be as effective at that point as they are right now. But I mean, regardless, I think definitely they'll stick to the plan regardless of whether or not they make the playoffs or whether they miss them. And I mean, even if they do make the playoffs, I don't think the upside for this team really exists unless they get a really favorable matchup through a couple of rounds. Like if teams like LA lose before the Sharks have to play them, or like Nashville comes out of the Central Division or something really wild like that. So, I mean, I just don't see where the upside is for this team, even if they make the postseason.
You got to like Ben Smith, though. He's good.
Yeah.
That's
blockbuster deadline acquisition.
I guess transitioning a little bit off the Sharks, they do. So, I still have no idea what we should root for tomorrow. I guess we should root for the Sharks to win. As Kings fans against the Jets? I don't even know.
Oh, 100% Sharks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. But they, like I said, they have the Jets tomorrow, they have Toronto on Thursday, and they have Montreal on Saturday. How much are you looking forward to some of those media scrums? Like, just with a million questions about Thornton and Wilson? Especially in Toronto and Montreal.
Yeah, at the very least, I think we'll get some pretty entertaining quotes out of that. And, I mean, every time Joe Thornton takes a media visit in Canada, it usually leads to something pretty memorable. So, Yeah, it should be fun, at least in Toronto and Montreal.
Haven't there been some McClellan to Toronto rumors? I think Drager or someone had.
Yeah, I think those have been going on forever. I think there was like, I mean, the funniest thing was, I mean, I was always sort of on the fence on firing McClellan after the loss to LA. But anyway, there was a lot of, I mean, there were a lot of people saying, oh, there's no way the Sharks should fire McClellan because it's clear he's an awesome coach. Toronto would hire him the second day. As if that was some sort of justification for not playing McClellan, because like the worst run team in the NHL is willing to snap him up right after him. But yeah, I mean, McClellan to Toronto has been going on for a while, and I think he has Edmonton connections too, so I wouldn't be surprised if they fire him that he ends up with either one of those teams. And I mean, good luck to McClellan in either of those cities.
So they are going to fire him, you think, if they miss?
I mean, he just seems like the most obvious scapegoat. I think the fans want blood, and I mean, ownership sees the dwindling ticket sales, and they'll have to do something. I mean, they can't trade Thornton or Marlowe because of the no movement clauses. They're probably not going to fire Doug Wilson because he did set expectations exceedingly low going into the season, and I think they also want to oversee sort of the transition from Worcester to San Jose of the AHL team. So they're probably not going to fire him. So it's pretty much McClellan or doing nothing, which I don't think they can justify for a second straight offseason.
Will that be a mistake, in your opinion, if they do it?
I mean, I guess it entirely depends on who they replace him with. If they hire Randy Carlyle, then yeah, sure, it's a mistake. But, I mean, if they hire someone like Dan Bylsma, like I don't know if there's really a difference between those two coaches. I think McClellan is pretty much – I mean, the two main – people who I could see getting replaced in the Sharks organization, like of consequence this offseason, are McClellan and Niemi. And I think they're pretty similar at their respective roles. They're both decent enough and they're not paid very much. But at the same time, they're probably pretty easily replaceable in terms of getting the performance that you get out of both of them. I mean, McClellan has done some really good things as the Sharks coach. I mean, I think a lot of their power play success, which is pretty much kept them alive this season and has sustained them in a lot of other years, is a lot of that is attributable to what he brought over from Detroit. And at the same time, he makes mind-numbingly bad lineup decisions. And I mean, I sort of blame him quite a bit for the loss to LA, even though he couldn't have controlled the Vlasic injury or Miami playing like dog shit. But I mean, putting out Mike Brown in six of the seven games of the series and scratching Tyler Kennedy and everyone, I mean, those are things at the margins that probably could have tipped the scales in the Sharks' favor in a very close seven-game series. So, I mean, so I won't really be too dismayed if they dismiss him, but it also depends on who they replace him with, obviously.
All right. So that, I guess, will conclude the Sharks portion of the episode. Unless you have a question about it or anything else you want to talk about the Sharks, Andrew.
Not so much. I'm curious about Weller, because Mueller, because I was very skeptical of that pick since he was a defenseman who didn't score. But then I think his draft plus one numbers looked good, and he's actually looked pretty decent to me in the NHL. Since he's like one of the Sharks' three good prospects that they're rebuilding around, I'm curious what you think of him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it was definitely a mistake to play him in the NHL this year. He has looked good at times, but I just don't think he's ready on the whole, and I think he could have really benefited from another year of development. Like you said, he never really had outstanding scoring numbers in junior. Even his draft plus 1 year was – actually, I think his draft plus 1 year was a worse points per game than his draft year, and neither was particularly good. So, I mean, I think another year where he could have possibly dominated the WHL or come close to doing that would have been beneficial for him. And I mean, they've scratched him for Scott Hannon half the time, so it's not like he's really learned anything here. But, I mean, there are things to like about him. He's a great skater. He has some size. He has a very active stick defensively. But he is pretty much useless with the puck on his stick, which you could probably have guessed from his junior scoring numbers or lack thereof. So, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, if everything goes right in his development, and I think things have already gone sort of wrong in his development, in that they played him this season instead of sending him back to junior, I think he probably tops out as like a solid number four, like defensive defenseman who can play on the penalty kill, which, I mean, for a first-round pick, especially one that they traded a second-rounder just to move up two slots to get him, I mean, that's not a great return on your investment, I don't think. But, I mean, I don't know. Hopefully he proves me wrong and turns into a really good defenseman, or turns into at least like Mark Edward Vlasic or something in terms of the top end defenseman. But I mean, Vlasic tore up the QMJHL after his draft year, so I think it's unrealistic to expect Mueller to become sort of the ideal defenseman.
Yeah, he sounds like Derek Forbert, dude. That's not good.
Yeah.
Although he's already in the NHL, so I would rank him ahead of Forbert. But
right.
Yeah, not totally promising stuff there. All right.
All
that concludes what I'm curious about.
That concludes the Sharks. Derek, you're welcome to stay on, though, as we discuss your favorite topic, the Los Angeles Kings.
Yeah.
So the Kings this past week had also went 2-1-0. They had fairly dominating performances against Colorado and Vancouver, helped by some bad goaltending at the other end, especially the Colorado game. The Vancouver game, they didn't get a lot of shots on goal, but they were, I thought, the better team for most of that game. The Nashville game, Nashville had more scoring chances. The Kings had better possession, and the Predators made them pay with like 2 goals a minute and 6 seconds apart to take that game regulation 2-1. So a little depressing. But the Kings have a chance to bounce right back tonight against a very bad Arizona Coyotes team. In fact, that game will be coming on probably like a half hour after we go off the air here. So I'm not going to talk about that game too much, because by the time a lot of you hear this show, it'll already be over. And you'll either be like, oh, yeah, we beat the Coyotes, or you'll be like, I never want to hear about this game again because we lost. So hopefully it's the former and not the latter. But the Kings
their
playoff. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
The Coyotes aren't that bad. They're like, I think they have the worst PDO in the league, or they're either 29th or 30th. And they're 48% on the year. And then I checked over the last 25.
48.9.
Because, like, they really collapsed lately in terms of the wins. And I checked their last 25 and their last 15, and they're still, like, chugging along at 48%. So, yeah, they suck, but they're not. They still are not, like, an automatic win, I think.
Okay. So, in other words, you're getting us ready for the Coyotes win tonight. Thank you, Andrea.
on the other hand,
but,
Mike Smith is starting, so.
Oh, yeah. Okay, never mind. Automatic win. All right. I take that back.
The funny part is they have a way better score just, of course, than Colorado, who I called an awful team during the TWIC last week, previewing the week ahead. And, like, the Colorado Avalanche, one of the Avalanche bloggers for the NHL Nation site got kind of mad at me in the comments and was like, oh, yeah, the awful team that's all 4 points behind the Kings. It's like, lady, they have a 44% Corsi, and they had, at the time, one less ROW than the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, like, I'm sorry, they're bad. And then the Kings kicked their butts and made me look a little smarter. But the Avalanche did now, in fact, tie the Maple Leafs in ROW, so good for them.
Yeah. Do you know what the Flames are at?
Shootout one. The Flames have a lot more ROW than the Kings, even. The Flames have 34. Oh, their Corsi is 44.4%. What's their Corsi in the last 15?
It's dropping like a rock, understandably, because they just lost, like, the best defenseman in the league. But they're at 41.8 over the last 15. They're playing Chris Russell 30 minutes a game. Like, literally. That's something that's actually done.
They have to collapse below the Kings, at least. Jesus Christ. They can't.
Yeah, that's why I'm not super worried about it. I'm, like, pretty confident the Flames are going to fall apart.
I mean,
yeah,
God, the Vancouver Canucks do not deserve to make it to the second round of the playoffs this year. But they would if they get to play Calgary, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to get.
They're barely break even in the score, just of course. So yeah, they're not particularly good either. But I think they're probably going to finish. Well, they're 3 points ahead of the Kings right now. They have the ROWs and tiebreaker. They have 4 more than the Kings do. The Kings do play them 2 more times, and they are 3-0 against them. So they can win both those games. That'll help. And maybe they could catch Vancouver for that second seed. But yeah, I don't know. I would like to finish at least third, because it means they're going to play Vancouver or Calgary in the first round, and I think that's probably a pretty easy. That's the easiest first round series the Kings have had, you know, in like decades, really. So
that's what I think happens. I think they're third, Vancouver second. Winnipeg makes it. Calgary drops out. I think that's where this ends up.
I don't know.
Winnipeg's good.
Yeah, I can see that. Winnipeg is 50.
They just destroy Tampa in Tampa. They're good.
Yeah. What do you think, Derek? What do you think that's the most likely scenario too?
Yeah, the Jets are a really good team. Their issue is that Michael Hutchinson has gone full Pavlik since the All-Star break. And yeah, that's pretty much imploded their playoff odds. But I mean, they should still make it. They're definitely better than the Sharks. But I mean,
yeah,
if they do
so
lose tomorrow, then I think it's probably sort of time to panic.
If the Jets lose tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, but they still would have a 2-point cushion on the Sharks, so it's not a huge deal.
Do you think the Kings are going to make the playoffs, Derek? What is your official non-troll prediction?
Yeah, I think Jake Sundstrom said it best today, that God doesn't love me enough to have the Kings miss the playoffs. So, yeah, no, I mean, I mean, if you look at their possession numbers since the Sekera trade, I mean, it's not quite Jeff Carter, Marion Gabrick level, but it's close. I mean, it's like 57% score-adjusted Corsi versus 59% with Carter and Gabrick. Of course, that's no guarantee of anything with so few games left, but I have to think that they pull this out.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they're going to get, you know, that's without Martinez, without Pearson. Those guys are coming back soon, and those are two of their better players.
When are they expecting to get Pearson back?
He's already skating, so I imagine it'll be pretty soon, certainly by the playoffs, but I think nothing is imminent. So
I'm glad we're all in agreement, Kings make the playoffs. Good. I know Derek is hoping they don't, just because he did save that tweet of mine to get ready to retweet it if they know. But I would like to point out I was kind of drunk when I wrote that, but I still think it's probably true. I wrote it while drunk, and A, and B, with the full knowledge that it will be retweeted, and I will look very stupid at the Kings miss, but that's how confident I am in the Kings.
Wait, Derek, has that ever happened to you? Like, you made a bad prediction on Twitter, and then people retweeted it?
Not that I can recall.
That wasn't really a prediction.
So.
I don't know if that even counts as a prediction. It was a very very aggressive statement, more like, than a prediction. That's still, like, probably my favorite tweet of all time. It was so great. I felt so bad when you tweeted it. That was one of the few things on Twitter that really pierced me in the heart. And then it got kind of like thrown back in your face.
And I think I was a dick to you back about it, and I was like, oh no, the Kings have only won one Stanley Cup. And like pretending to be like a distraught Kings fan after that. Then they went on to win a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's some kind of karma, I guess. But when Kings are going to get, I guess you could say the Kings are due for bad karma, but it hasn't happened yet. So they might miss the playoffs, though. That'll be the bad karma. We predicted it here on the dual cast.
They have such an easy road if they do make it, though, because, I mean, they'd probably play Vancouver in the first round and then Anaheim in the second. I mean, that's like a straight shot to the conference final right there.
Oh, it's so tasty. Yeah.
I'm a little worried
about going far.
I don't know about if they could be. It depends on how Darryl uses the defenseman. I don't know if this Kings team is going to be Chicago or St. Louis. Nashville's had a number in the regular season. I think the Kings could beat them in a conference final. Chicago and St. Louis will be a little tougher, but I guess we'll see. And after that, it's, you know, probably someone pretty decent in the East this time, including not like the Devils here. Whereas you look at the Kings Rangers, probably more like the Kings Rangers series, where the Rangers, if you look at the individual games, kind of gave them a run for their money, but, you know, things happen. Overtime goals happen, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm not so worried. I don't know. Chicago without Kane, without superstar Ben Smith, who they just traded away in San Jose. And St. Louis's possession numbers, although Tarasenko is terrifying, their possession numbers are not that great this year. I think the Kings are, you know, at least at worst an even match against those teams, although those teams would have home ice, unfortunately. Derek, one thing I'm curious about your take on is, if we can skip briefly over to the worst conference, is the East, where I think there's not really a clear best team in there. I think it's like totally a jumble at the top, but do you share that opinion?
I don't know. I personally still really feel strongly about the Bolts' chances this year. I just really like the way the team is constructed, and I know their possession numbers have sort of fallen off lately, but I think quite a bit of that is losing Matt Carl, who's finally having the kind of season that I think the Lightning thought that he would have more regularly when they gave him that big contract in free agency. I think if they can get him back and maybe Braden Coburn, too, to play on that second pairing, even though he's not really that spectacular, and they probably overpaid a bit for him at the deadline. I think they're probably the most complete team in the East, or right up there with the Islanders. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that there are so many similarly situated teams at the top of that conference that it's hard to predict who's going to come out of it.
Is there a team with a better, like, 5-year outlook than Tampa Bay? I think
Chicago
is the only team that's close, but yeah.
Yeah,
the Islanders
are sort of well set up too, but yeah.
All right. Before we get any further here, we have about 20 minutes left in the show probably, so if I don't even Diesel D or whoever else wants to try to call in again, it is Mr. D, I would recommend you call in with the phone number this time instead of your Skype connection. But the phone number is 347-850-1179, and you can try the Skype click-to-talk button, although, again, Diesel D should not. So, yeah, if you want to call in and ask us anything about the Kings or the Sharks or even something else, I guess, feel free. Anyway.
Tom, do we have any Twitter questions?
We had a bunch of Twitter questions, but most of them were jokes.
Yeah, they're all trolls. I, like, asked for Twitter questions, and, like, literally everyone just trolled me. I'm like, I'm actually asking the questions.
Nathan wants to know if we can send him a dozen bagels. We cannot. We are not
no,
a bagel
No, he gets
shop.
No bagels. If he asked, like, a real question, I would consider sending him to you if he gave me his address. But he just trolls. That's what they all do. That's all Twitter is. I just realized this. People constantly trolling you.
Realize this now. Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of getting trolled, I mean, I just realized that tomorrow the Islanders are playing the Blackhawks, and NBC is showing Buffalo again instead.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
That's amazing. That is amazing, right? I tweeted about that yesterday. They scheduled the Buffalo Sabres for two straight nights on national TV in March.
And they're billing this as the push for the playoffs. That's like their tagline now on the broadcast.
I saw that on the broadcast. Push for the playoffs, the Buffalo Sabres. Okay. They're officially eliminated, by the way, for people who don't know. They are mathematically eliminated. They could win out, and they would not make it. So, push for the playoffs, Buffalo Sabres. Great job, as always, NHL. Anyway, Marissa wants to know if we miss her. Did we miss Marissa?
I want to give a brief shout-out to her, since she just had her wisdom teeth out, but, like, she has six. She has, like, more wisdom teeth than normal, which is just horrifying. So she's recovering from that, and, you know, best wishes to her. I do miss her.
Okay, I can barely hear you for some reason. Can you hear him, Derek?
Yeah, more or less.
Okay, so it's my end again, so that's great. Chris Jenkins wants to know, ask him what the Oak called its favorite hula hoop.
No, this is a
and then he gives the answer, it was Trio.
All right.
Okay, Mike has an actual question. Mike from the Calgary Flames blog, Match Sticks and Gasoline, he wants to know, who are the next prospects in the Kings system to make the jump to the AHL or NHL?
Okay, so to the NHL, okay, the Kings system kind of sucks right now, and they didn't help themselves by trading McCann away. But to the NHL, I think Forbes, like, got a call-up pretty recently, although he didn't play. So I think he is actually reasonably likely to make the roster next season, since they will need cheap extra defensemen. I think Jordan Wheel is ready to be in the NHL, but probably maybe for another team and not for the Kings. And I think those two are about it. Going to the AHL, I mean, Ebert will get there if he's not already there. But,
yeah, that's the part of the question I didn't get, because it seems like it's not hard to make the AHL, I feel like. I feel like any guy who, like, does reasonably well in junior ends up getting a shot in the AHL.
So do you think there's anybody who can have a positive impact on the team next year who has not had one this year?
Probably not.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think Forbert can do that. And I think Wheel could. He could be a better depth center than Stoll or Mike Richards or maybe even Nick Shore is.
But I don't think the Kings are going to give him that chance. So I will say no help.
Is Jordan Wheel available next year?
Dude, that is a great question, and I don't know the answer to it.
Yeah, just wondering if they're going to Lyndon Bay him to my team.
I think that's the most likely scenario. Yeah, he gets paid the third pick at the draft.
I'm glad you brought up Lyndon
Bay.
I'm glad you brought up Lyndon Bay, Derek, because Lyndon Bay is not doing too well for Vancouver.
Yeah, he's not.
Are you surprised by that, Andrew, considering you're so high on Lyndon?
I am, and it makes me look bad, so I don't like it at all. I still think he needs more time, but he has had a rough time, and the Canucks are just content to let him sort of flounder in that center spot. Yeah. So, like, he's getting chances, so that's a bit unsettling. On the other hand, McKayan, the guy who can stick with the pick, did not really have a great draft for 1 year anyway, which is why he was included in the Sakura trade. If he had the draft for 1 year that he had wanted, he would not have been included in the trade. He sort of demoted himself to C-level prospect status, I think. So, everyone loses.
Everyone loses.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll be back with Vancouver next year? Are they going to be patient with him?
I think they're sort of, even though they're in the playoffs this year and they look like they'll miss it, I think they're very much in this. These young guys a chance sort of mode, and I think they still will be next year. So I expect they'll probably keep giving him nice time, which I might do too. I don't think that's a terrible organizational decision. I might bench him to the playoffs if they have someone better, but I might give him another shot next year.
Okay, well, that's our Lyndon Bay report, everybody. It always should be a topic when Andy's on the show. He was well known for being a Lyndon Bay fan.
Do you guys think Wheel is going to be better than Bay, or is he pretty much the same player?
Possible.
I'll say he's a slightly worse prospect than Bay was at this time last year.
You think he's slightly better, I'm sorry?
Worse, slightly worse.
Worse, okay, worse. Wow, that's encouraging. I don't think he's going to get a chance for the Kings anyway.
We have nobody.
Yeah. So, let's see, what else is going on? The Ducks are, like, in a weird spot right now where they can't really drop out of the top of the division, but they're not really playing particularly well, and they're not getting the results they're getting earlier in the year. Are they kind of this year's, like, sitting duck division winner? Are they basically the same thing they were last year? Or
aren't they the sitting? Yeah, aren't they the sitting duck division winner every year?
Yeah. What is it with them then? Why are they doing this year after year? Because this is one of these responses now that you get with fancy stuff. It's like, well, then why are the Ducks doing so well every year?
Yeah, once they do it like 3 years in a row, you start to think, oh, well, there's probably something to this with the fact they're missing because it's just so many games where they're doing this. But the thing is, if you dig into how exactly they're doing this and how they're turning a low quality suspend into wins, it's different every year. Like last year, they shot the daylight out at even strength. They were by far the best teams in the league. And this year, they're not. They're pretty normal in shooting, but they're just converting goals into wins at an insane clip. So I think that makes me think that there isn't some secret sauce the Ducks have discovered and the Ducks aren't able to know about. It makes me think they're just getting rusty in different ways. And that will all ultimately end in playoff humiliation, probably to the Kings.
One thing they've sustained for the last 3 years, the ridiculous one-goal game winning percentage that Andrew was referring to. And, I mean, I just can't see any way that that's actually, like, a sustainable tactic that Bruce Boudreau is using or something like that. I think, I mean, their goal differential right now is, like, plus 13. I mean, that's nowhere near any of the other division leaders. And, I mean, it's nowhere near even some of the wild card team. So, yeah, I mean,
the same as L.A., by the way.
Right,
they're both
yeah.
plus 13. Vancouver is plus 9. Calgary is plus 24 somehow.
Yeah, they're the PDO team this year.
Yeah.
But I mean, the one thing with the Canucks, I do like what they did at the trade deadline a lot. Like, they made a lot of really solid moves, getting Sakach and getting Wisniewski and adding Simone Dupre and moving out guys like Eric Brewer and Rene Bork. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe they could be a slightly better team now, but I mean, I still don't think they have a good chance against or something like that.
Yeah. That Dupre trade was ridiculous because I had always assumed Ben Lovejoy was like 26 or something. He's 31.
Yeah.
That's totally crazy that the Penguins would do that. Just, So yeah, the Ducks have a pretty nice. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. You finish your point. I'm sorry. I thought you were done talking.
Yeah, the Ducks have a pretty nice core of young defensemen set up. Even if I don't think they're for real this year, I think they have they stand a great chance of being better next year than they are right now.
Okay,
so they're
that was my follow-up. That was my follow-up question, was where are they going from here, and that's kind of answered it. Because I do think they're set up well to do better in the future, which is annoying, but they're getting all this regular season success right now while they're really not that good, and they could be even better in a year or two. So, screw the Ducks. I will say that going to Honda Center and watching the Kings blow a 2-0 lead there was great motivation for them to become my most favorite team. It's always been a close race for me with Anaheim and San Jose, but, like, San Jose's kind of gotten so pathetic lately, and Anaheim's just, I can't stand them anymore. They're just so annoying. They need to stop doing this. I can't deal with it every year that they're just mediocre, and yet they somehow win the division by a mile. It's embarrassing.
So, John, when Marlowe scored the overtime winning goal last year in Game 3, and there were, like, 40,000 gutless tweets in your timeline, was that, like, your least favorite sports moment ever?
I don't know about least favorite. It's probably up there. I think my least favorite scoring moment ever is still probably it's probably Vancouver's comeback in the first round in 2010, in whichever game they won when they were trailing. The Kings are going to go up, I guess 3-1 or 3-2 or something. It's not great my memory.
I think that was Game 4, and the Kings were going to go up 3-1, and then they blew it.
Yeah, okay. So it was something like, I think it was Game 4. That was probably my least favorite. Because it looked like they were going to be coasting the next round, and instead the series tied again. And then Vancouver went up 3-2 in Game 5, which I think was the double hook game, where they hooked Quick, put in Erzberg, and then hooked Erzberg for Quick again, because he was so bad. But, I still think that's my least favorite scoring moment. But I guess last year that would be up there, too. But I just, because everything was so hopeful, I mean, you didn't really think the Kings were going to beat the Canucks, but then suddenly they're up 2-1, and it's like, wow, we're finally back in the playoffs, maybe we're really going to do this, and then, just kind of happens like that. But
Derek, have you had any bad sports moments in the past, I don't know, year?
Well, none of them matter now that Mike Brown is back on the Sharks.
Right, yeah.
What is your saddest sports moment, putting aside the obvious one?
God, that's a good question. I've just had so many with the Sharks alone. I mean, probably the Kevin Bieksa goal in overtime. The Sharks completely dominated that game, and Roberto Luongo was ridiculous. And, I mean, with about 20 seconds left, first of all, they cleared it off the one stanchion, and that got called back for icing, and then Kessler scored to tie it, and then the same stanchion struck again, and Bieksa scored. So, yeah, that was probably the worst. I was in disbelief that actually happened.
That was so
was that
lame.
The game where
I was so mad.
Was that the game where they were shooting them, like, 40-something to 14 or something crazy?
Yeah, I think Luongo made something like 56 saves in that game. So.
Okay. And the Canucks had, like, a ridiculously low number of shots, right?
Yeah, they did.
So,
I mean, the amazing thing is Niemi had like an .880 save percentage in that playoff run, and the Sharks made Game 5 of the Western Conference Final.
Yeah, I mean, because you guys, the difference would be you thought you probably had a shot in 2011, whereas in 2010 the Blackhawks were just so clearly better.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean that 2010 Blackhawks team is ridiculous when you look back on it, but. If the salary cap didn't exist, I don't know if they would have. If they could have kept that team going like for a few more years, it would have been pretty tough for them to get that 2020 cup because that team was ridiculous. So I'm trying to think of what else we could talk about here. What's your happiest sports moment? Would it be the overtime goal with Thornton eliminating the Kings?
Not even that one as much. I think it was probably Patrick Marleau in 2010 finally beating the Red Wings. I mean, first of all, Marleau's overtime goal to go up 3-0 in the series, because that one actually, I mean, I guess it felt exactly like Marleau's overtime goal in Game 3 last year, except this one actually turned out well for the Sharks. But, yeah, I mean, they had never beaten Detroit since the 94 upset, and it was getting really annoying, and I really hated the Red Wings at the time. And the Sharks had just come off like one of their most disappointing first-round losses to the Ducks the previous year, and they hadn't been back to the conference finals since 2004. So, I mean, all of those things combined, and Marleau being the one to score in Game 3 and then finish the series off in Game 5, that was pretty cool. So that was probably the best.
Yeah, and that was a beautiful goal too, wasn't it? Wasn't that like a really nice pass from Thornton and Marleau?
Yeah. The game three overtime goal was ridiculous. The Red Wings, first of all, the Sharks made a terrible line change, and it looked like the Red Wings were going to score, and then the puck bounced off the back glass and came all the way to Thornton, who had just come off the bench, and it was a 2-on-1 the other way, and it was a really nice pass from Thornton to Marleau for pretty much an empty netter.
Yeah, unlike that Kings goal, which was complete garbage.
Right. Yeah, that was terrible. It was like off Moyne Avenue.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my least favorite is still that Sharks collapse. The time that the Kings were up 4-0 and lost.
Right.
I think that's still my least favorite. I had a buddy at the game, and I like texted him after every goal, being like, hey, it's all right. The Kings are still ahead. They've got this. Don't freak out. And they lost anyway. It was terrible.
That was up there for me, too. But I think it helped that once Kopitar was hurt, I never thought they had a chance anyway. And it's like, when it happens, it's like, well, this is the thing that's happening. This is terrible. But, you know, I never really thought they were going to win anyway. It was just a particularly bad way for them to lose. So.
Yeah, I agree. And they weren't even like playing great in that game to go up 4-0. It was just that I think it was Niemi was just awful and let in like goals, missed shots from Brad Richardson from the blue line for going in.
Oh god,
and, like,
the Willie Mitchell goal that opened that was completely embarrassing. It was a Willie Mitchell wrist shot from like the far wall, and that somehow went in.
Yeah, no, like I think the Sharks were just messing with the Kings. They were seeing like
how
big a lead they could stake them and then win anyway.
Guys, have we all seen, by the way, the Edmonton Oilers have a 3-0 lead on the Maple Leafs less than 10 minutes into this game? Holy crap.
That's how it is.
Wow. Like,
didn't the Maple Leafs just get, like, destroyed by the Flames?
They did. And the Canucks.
Yeah.
Back to that day. The Oilers have 3 goals on 5 shots. And that would be Mr. One Jonathan Bernier, who was pulled after allowing 3 goals on 4 shots. So
that's future Sharks, Jonathan Bernier.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
I feel like he's given up. I feel like he's been like, well, whatever. I don't really care anymore. This is awful. I just want the season to end. But I don't know if the rest of the team has too. They probably have. You have that whole like debacle with Nazem Kadri on top of everything else. Like, they're a good team anyway. It's just like, time to pack.
Yeah, can I say something about the Kadri thing? I don't know if you guys talked about it on the last one or whatever, but doesn't make sense to like jeopardize your, even though the Leafs are trying to tank and like it makes sense not to play your best players, it's not worth the long term of possibly alienating the best player in the team. I mean, I think players actually do remember this stuff. They really care a lot about being respected and treated well. So I think the Leafs are going to regret that long term, quite possibly.
Is it 4-0 now? Is that why someone just tweeted, "Oh my god"? the Leafs are amazing. Like I think they're down 4-0 now.
Yeah. The classic Anton Lander power play goal.
Jesus.
They make it 4-0.
Oh, I'm watching this goal now, the passing here. Like two Leafs falling down trying to cover the same guy. And then, oh my god. This is amazing.
They probably put Anton Lander on the power
radio
play as like a mercy. They probably put Anton Lander on the power play as a mercy to the Leafs.
I don't know who Mac William is, but he is a terrible defenseman, judging by that last play. The only time I've ever seen him play hockey. Like, I don't even know what he was trying to do.
I think, like, dressing made-up players, I've literally never heard of this guy before.
I never have either, and I feel like I've heard of a lot of hockey players.
Yeah.
Like, even minor leagues. I've never heard of him. We gotta look this guy up. Let's do it live on the dual cast show. Who is Mac William? His name is Andrew MacWilliam. He was drafted in the 7th round, 188th overall in the 2008 NHL draft. So you know, future superstar Andrew MacWilliam. He has 7 points in 53 games with the Toronto Marlies last year, which is off the pace of 9 points in 57 games with the Marlies the year before. So
I see.
Future superstar Andrew MacWilliam. I don't know what he did exactly to earn a call up, but that's something.
Good dual cast profile there.
Oh, the Leafs. God bless the Toronto Maple Leafs. They are. I mean, if you think about it, that's a great fantasy strategy. Call up your 7th round pick from 2008 with 7 points in like 53 games in the AHL. It's like, wow, they're doing this tanking thing well.
Yeah, but the thing is, the Sabres are untouchable, and like the Leafs are still going to have, I think, less than a 30% chance at one of the top 2 picks, right? It's going to be like around 30%.
Yeah.
That's not good.
They're trying their best, okay? They're trying their best to get down there, get as far deep as they can. I think there's someone they could still catch. I don't know. Let's see. Because Pension Plan Public says this every day about the Marlies are making a playoff push, everybody. So I don't know how losing Andrew MacWilliam will affect their playoff push. But
just because there's a top 2 and then a drop off, and the way the lottery rules work, the only important thing is 1, and then whether you're 2, 3, 4, or 5 is not that important.
Okay, so the Leafs did get all the way to 4th now with they passed Carolina. But it's not a sure thing because they're tied in points. So they're trying to really make sure they got that 4th worst pick. They probably can't even catch the Coyotes because they're 10 points ahead of the Coyotes already. So that's your...
I just hope they draft Lawson Crouse just to see my timeline explode.
No, that would be awful, dude. Steve Frazier would tweet about it like 4 times an hour for the next 12 years. So that would not be good. Not be good.
So the Oilers are up 4-0, and I guess that's a good way to end this week's podcast. What the
heck? Yeah, wait.
4-0?
Hang on, we can agree we want McDavid to go to Carolina, right?
Or Arizona, yeah.
But
wouldn't
you
already
want him
be
in
like...
Arizona? Dude, he's going to destroy the Sharks for a decade.
Yeah.
If he goes to Carolina, then the Hurricanes will be scary pretty quick because their possession numbers are already like way better than you probably think they are. So,
and they got future superstar Roland McEwen from LA.
That's true. Yeah, so anchor that top line. But unless
holy shit,
the Hurricanes
are 52.7% score adjusted Corsi since January 1st. So that's something. Yeah, they're a good team.
They're better than the Sharks on the team.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny. But, yeah, I mean, if he goes to Edmonton, that's just a waste of a good player. And if he goes to Arizona, he will probably help the Coyotes become, like, a friggin' dynasty. Mm-hmm. So, hopefully he goes to Carolina. If he goes to Toronto, we'll never hear the end of it. So, yeah. I mean, where else could he? He could end up a lot of places, I guess, given the new lottery odds. But I hope he doesn't go to like Philadelphia. That'd be terrible. I don't want him in Philly.
Oh, that would be fun, dude. That'd be fun.
Well, he get traded in the Kings in about 6 years.
Oh yeah, that's true. Actually, yeah, he'll get a drinking problem and they'll strip him out. Oh, the Claude Giroux one hasn't come true yet, so I'm starting to doubt it.
Right.
All right. Oh, Anton Lindsay just took a penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct, so these are starting to come back now. All right, we should sign off.
Okay.
Everybody, thank you for joining
us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Andrew's stealing my line, thanking Derek. thank you. I will thank you too, Derek. Thank you. Oh, he dropped. He didn't want my thank you. You got to thank you, Andrew, and that's all the thank you needed.
Bye, guys.
Good night, everybody.